This morning I wanted to share some reflections on a topic I actually can't recall I have ever preached about before. And that is, in some ways, an anticipation of our annual congregational meeting. I don't think we'll have in any way a particularly unusual meeting today, but it seemed to me that I wanted to reflect on the meanings of the meetings that we hold, and depending upon the church and the churches you've been involved with, some churches meet infrequently, some meet incessantly. But I think it's worthy of our reflection because it takes up a lot of time and energy. Now, many churches, not all by any means, but many follow a kind of congregational system the way we in metropolitan community churches around the world do. That means that, in short, when we gather both as a global gathering of MCC in our conferences, but also locally, when we gather as a congregation, it is that gathered body that is the ultimate and final earthly decision maker. We do not have a pope. We do not have other structures. It is the gathered body. The congregation, in fact, makes the ultimate decisions. The board of directors, you elect them, they serve you. You elect the lay delegates to be your voice to our larger denomination. You elect your pastor when you are in a vacancy, and you can, in fact, remove me. There is a process for that. Please don't do that this afternoon. It takes a little, you know. We are all elected by, and we report to you. So, essentially, you are our boss, but essentially that also means that you are ultimately responsible for everything that does or doesn't happen here. So it cuts both ways. So in this kind of church, in a church like MCC and other churches that work that way, meetings are, in fact, a big deal. They're a big deal. Now, sometimes our meetings, our congregational meetings, can be perhaps controversial or conflicted. Anyone ever been at a church meeting that was conflicted? Yes, well, don't lie in church. If you've been at, you know. Now, sometimes, usually less often, they can be fun and interesting or informative and engaging, and sometimes they're a little bit of both, a little bit of both. Now, again, I don't expect anything particularly controversial today in our meeting. We have well-qualified candidates for our board of directors. We have a very modest budget proposed for 2015 annual reports. Now, who knows? We could be surprised by something. But I have heard it said, and I like to say it as well, that the Spirit moves in our business as well as in our worship. The Spirit moves in business as well as in worship. And theologically, I believe that is absolutely true. If I believe that the presence of God and the presence of the Holy Spirit are with us every time and in every place, it means that in fact, it is present with us in business as well as worship. Why then does it so seldom seem that way? I recall several years ago a really memorable encounter at one of our Metropolitan Community Church denominational gatherings at our general conference. This is, I'm guessing, easily 8 or 10 years ago. And I was with a group of, I don't even think I was clergy at that time, I was with a group of delegates and other colleagues in a hallway, and we were chatting with Reverend Dolores Berry. Now, some of you know who Reverend Berry is. She's one of the former pastors of this congregation in the 80s, and she is still a traveling evangelist and singer in Metropolitan Community Churches. And if you've ever met Reverend Berry, you know that she is a lively and engaging presence. She is fantastic. Now, in this encounter with Reverend Berry, whom I had met before many times, she was on her way from one meeting to another meeting. Anyone who has been at a conference knows that you can meet incessantly at a general conference because everyone around the world is there and you all want to get together for something or another. And someone in our group commented to Dolores, "You're on your way to another meeting, aren't you?" And she just grinned and beamed and shook her head, yes. You know, she was thrilled. And she wasn't faking it either. She delighted in meetings. She lived for meetings. Now, those gathered around kind of groaned and shook our heads at her delight. Apparently, we had more mixed feelings about successions of meetings upon meetings. So what is it that Reverend Dolores Berry had that we didn't? What did she get that we had missed? Was she a little extra peculiar? She was certainly no more peculiar than any of the rest of us in that hallway. How is it that she found meetings so life-giving when so many others of us experience them as life-draining? Why waste time in meetings when there is so much work and ministry to be done? The reading we hear this morning from the book of Acts is an account of a very early and very prominent church meeting. It was the so-called Council at Jerusalem. It is the first recorded council of the Christian church that we take note of. The first recorded council meeting of the Christian church, and apparently we've been meeting ever since. Now, there are two differing versions of this early and really seminal church council, this Jerusalem council. The one that we hear in Acts chapter 15, we hear some excerpts of that this morning. And there's another version of this meeting in Paul's letter to the Galatians. Paul relates his own experience of meeting with the elders and the community in Jerusalem. And they are rather different. The issue at stake is the same. It's the issue of how is this early movement to deal with the increasing number of non-Jewish Christians in this movement that was founded in, founded by, and still led by Jews. How Jewish? The question was, how Jewish did Gentiles need to become to be Christian? Did they need to observe the whole Jewish law, some parts of the Jewish law, circumcision, yay or nay? Now, the version in Acts gives us a rather, shall we say, sanitized view of that meeting. Now, even though it admits, quote, no small dissension, and quote, debate, in all, it seems like a pretty respectful gathering of minds, where Peter makes the argument and paves the way for Paul and Barnabas to bear witness to how the Spirit worked amongst the uncircumcised Gentiles. A rather inspiring version of a church meeting that went nicely and went well. Now, Paul's version of events is a little bit more colorful. He, quote, opposes Peter to his face, calling him self-condemned and a hypocrite. Two very different versions of the same meeting. Well, isn't that just like every meeting? Were people in the same place at the same time? They leave with selective memory about who said what to whom and why, and what did we actually decide? Now, granted, there was a difference of about 30 to 40 years between Paul's version of the event and the letter of Acts that he wrote in his letter and the book of Acts, but maybe they should have had a better clerk at that meeting. I get it. We have a better clerk at our meeting. Even though the tone is so different that they could possibly have been completely different meetings, the outcome, however, was the same. The early movement did not impose the full requirement of Jewish observance, only a couple of things, but notably, most notably, they decided not to insist upon the circumcision of men. In effect, they affirmed that anyone can become a Christian without having to become Jewish first. Now, 2,000 years later, that is old news. That is not much of a big deal for us. But it was a big deal for them. This was an issue of identity at stake. And imagine how different the church and the history of Christianity would be had they reached a different decision in that meeting. Meetings can be a pretty big deal. And the Spirit moves as well in business as it does in worship. So based upon that early church council meeting and more than a few years of church meetings under my belt, I want to offer a couple of observations about meetings. And the first one is this. Most meetings expect some kind of outcome or some kind of action, either in the short term or in the long term. Think about it. That first meeting, how seismic and how dramatically it changed the trajectory of the whole history of the church. That council changed things. We do well to consider what might be the future impact of a decision our meetings might make. The outcomes. How will it impact us now and Native American tradition advises us 7 generations from now? Envision the impact. Will our decision be memorable for who they include or because of whom they forgot? We will never know the future with certainty, but we must pause and consider the impact upon others of the decision that we might make. And second, perhaps more importantly, meetings are never just about the decisions. They are never about the decisions only. It's about the people participating and the process that they share. It's not just about the outcome, but the people and the process. I remember a meeting of the Board of Directors of Metropolitan Community Church of Los Angeles, where I was a member for about 20 years. And I served on the Board of Directors, and this is easily 15 or 20 years ago. I was on the Board of Directors. And I had become very passionate about a particular issue that was confronting the board that I knew was going to be on the agenda in a month or two. So I wrote a very weighty tome, a very earnest letter to the board of directors with whom I served, expressing my opinion and outlining a whole process of how we should reach the right decision, of course, on the matter, because it was my idea. And in the meeting, we had lengthy discussion, some, I wouldn't necessarily recall heated debate, but some lively debate and some give and take and some push and pull. And at the end of all that discussion, a motion was made in which everyone voted in favor and I voted against. And a groan arose around the table. Then quietly, but ever so deliberately, the pastor who was moderating the meeting said, "Nathan, do you realize you just voted against the motion you wanted us to make?" I had become so fixated upon seeing a particular outcome in a particular way, with particular words, and was still worked up because of how passionate I was about it, I couldn't even see the people in front of me. I couldn't even hear that they had actually come to agree with me that I voted against my own motion for the outcome I wanted to see. Thankfully, I was allowed to change my vote. That was a lesson worth learning as a board member. Wouldn't it be nice if everyone always agreed with me? That's not the lesson. Or what if everyone always agreed with you? And I was totally going to say this if she was in the room. She's not, but I'm going to say it anyway. Or if everyone agreed with Kimberly Brown. Or if everyone agreed with Kelly McFarland or Charles Donald or Scott Baker or Reverend Diane. I can't even say Diane Shaw's name. But we already know everyone does always agree with Betty Nelson. Yeah. Wouldn't it make things so much easier? Well, the only church where everyone agrees on everything is a church of one. That means the only meeting where everyone might agree might as well be a meeting of one. What sort of listening or growth is required when everyone always agrees? You know, if there isn't more than one opinion in the room, you really don't need to have more than one person present. People are different. They will have differing opinions about what can and what should be done. People of goodwill and conscience will disagree, and that is a good thing because that's how we listen and learn and grow and realize none of us has all the answers or has the full picture, or has the whole puzzle, just one piece. But it's how we do that with one another that reveals our values and shapes our identity. Do we do it with compassion, with loving kindness, with care? I was chatting with Pat Schweibert on Friday, and she gets a preview of the bulletin because she is printing it in her print shop for us. And she commented on the title of the sermon and offered this story, and I asked her permission to share it. And she is one of those persons who self-admittedly does not like many kinds of meetings. I mean, she is someone who lives her spirituality. She just, to work is to pray, in my observation of Pat Schweibert. And she has always struggled with meetings, she said. Hated them, annoyed by them, didn't want to go to them. Until several years ago, she had this epiphany during a difficult meeting. She realized that it didn't matter what was being discussed in the meeting. She had the opportunity to observe the people in the room and how they interacted with one another, what they said and did, how it touched or triggered something in her, how she saw them respond to one another. It became not about what was being discussed, but about the people in the room and how they were interacting with one another. Every meeting for her now has become an opportunity to understand and know others and herself better. That's an insight and an opportunity that at every meeting we have an opportunity to learn something and learn about someone. So meeting is one of those really common words, and it's so common I decided to look up its etymology, its background. And it's not particularly unusual. The word meeting or meet comes from an old English word that was just spelled differently, meet. And it means, as one might expect, to come across, to come in the presence of, or to become acquainted with. Meet. That's how we understand meet and meeting. It's related to another word, another old word, which we still use, but not as frequently, the word moot. Meat and moot are related. But moot means it's open for discussion or debate or even of no practical value. Unfortunately, isn't that what some of us think meetings are mootings instead of meetings? But think about it. What if we actually paused to consider that all of our meetings are meetings? Are meetings that we come into the presence of one another and the presence of God. You know, some traditions, Quakers, for example, call their worship meetings. What we believe are business meetings. Do we believe they are meetings? What would happen if we believed that in our board of directors it was a meeting? Our staff, our volunteers, that they were encounters, that they were each and every one of them, each and every time, an opportunity to connect person to God encounters. Now, that's sounding a bit more like worship, isn't it? Encounter, annual, monthly, weekly, daily, here, at work, at home, encounters with the presence. Meetings will and should have outcomes, and sometimes they will have far-reaching consequences from their decisions. That's why we take them as seriously and as prayerfully as worship. And just like worship, they are meant to be life-giving encounters.